This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Monday edition of the Noon Business Hour as another trading week is underway. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Jennifer Kuiper. We have 31 degrees in Chicago under partly sunny skies. We're going up to a high today of 36 degrees.
The Noon Business Hour presented by Republic Bank of Chicago.
Coming up on today's Noon Business Hour, retail sales, coronavirus, and the election, what to know in the week ahead. Popeye's chicken sandwich boosts sales big time, and a look at the economic impact of the fast-spreading coronavirus.
The week ahead will feature the latest report on retail sales, also a primary election and congressional testimony by the chairman of the Fed. To talk about it, we're joined by Carl Riccadonna, chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg, based in New York. Carl, let's begin with the primary. Tomorrow is primary day in New Hampshire. Are economists really paying attention to what's going on? Is it still early in the process?
Well, it's certainly early in the process, and we need only look back to Michael Dukakis to realize that we don't want to pay attention to approval-disapproval ratings too early in the election year because they can certainly swing pretty substantially after we get to the mid-year conventions. That being said, with all of the noise and uncertainty surrounding the results in Iowa, there's going to be a lot more focus on to narrowing down the field and trying to get a sense of who the real front runners actually will be.
And so that really takes, as you mentioned, you know, later on in the year, maybe after Super Tuesday, then everyone's looking at, hey, what might happen to the economy either under four more years of this president or 4 to 8 years of someone else?
Absolutely. So certainly the election will have major consequences for the direction of financial markets. And so I do think that the choice on November 3rd will really potentially impact market valuations, but we don't know who that Democrat's going to be just yet. So, certainly we'll have to stay tuned to this, but have a better sense of who the front runner will be heading into Milwaukee in July.
Carl, Fed Chair Powell's semiannual testimony in front of Congress takes place this week. What is the expectation?
The expectation is that he's going to make a pretty firm case for the Fed not to move any further in terms of easing interest rate policy. So I'm sure there will be plenty of questions about coronavirus and how the Fed will respond to this. And the Fed did acknowledge in prepared reports, that coronavirus did pose a downside risk to the economy. But the Fed is not at a neutral stance at the moment. They've got their foot pressed down on the accelerator, and with trade headwinds dissipating, that should leave policy well positioned to take on some modest headwinds from coronavirus. Now, we have to see how fast and how far this spreads, and we'll get some good indications when we look at small business sentiment tomorrow morning, consumer sentiment on Friday. Those are February data points, which will potentially show if we're starting to see some downdrafts in the economy. But certainly, I don't think we'll see it in the hard economic data until later this quarter. But one thing also worth watching is the industrial production data on Friday, because the shutdowns of Boeing and now these supply chain disruptions do have the potential to extend the manufacturing sector recession that we've seen for just about 6 months running now.
And also retail sales come out on Friday. What's your thinking there?
Retail sales should look decent, but again, we'll be a little bit more forward-looking, looking at those sentiment gauges to see if there's a panic in sentiment, then there would be eventually a knock-on on actual consumption. But we're not there yet. Equity market is still holding up, and leading indicators of these sentiment surveys are still holding up as well.
Carl Riccadonna, chief U.S. economist with Bloomberg, thank you so much for joining us. And coming up, a look at the economic impact of the fast-spreading coronavirus. Economic impact of the coronavirus continues to grow. Let's talk about the latest developments with Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager with Smart Portfolios out of San Diego. Jim, what is the latest on the coronavirus and the economic impact? And the businesses in China, are they mostly reopening today?
Well, it's a mixed picture in terms of the number of businesses reopening, and that's going to probably continue to be the case. The real problem really comes into a lot of small and medium-sized companies in China don't have direct access to money as the large state-owned enterprises. So these small companies are very vulnerable to an extended period of, you know, the Chinese economy slowing, obviously not maybe having enough workers to do production and so forth. So that is going to be one of the key things, is how these small companies are able to keep their doors open if they don't have access to money to tide them over, and at the same time, how these small companies fit into the bigger picture in terms of supply chains. And that's the knock-on effect that, honestly, it's too soon to really be able to quantify that accurately.
So what is the Chinese government saying about this and about how it might help businesses, if at all?
Well, they're attempting to, I think about $8 billion is being committed to help, I think, a number of mid-size and larger companies. I'm sure that dollar amount is going to go higher in coming days. But the real key is the, if you will, the way to address and access and get money to the small companies that are going to be far more vulnerable to this slowdown. And that's just a bigger challenge than existing big companies where they already have banking relationships and so forth. So the longer this drags on, it is definitely going to have an impact on thousands of very, very small companies in China.
Found it interesting that last week we saw that the U.S. was offering $100 million to the Chinese to sort of help with this. But then you get into the back and forth over trade that's been going on. You get into, in general, a lot of countries wanting to handle this on their own. So kind of difficult how to navigate this and get it under control.
Well, the big thing is that the Chinese government chose to, during the month of December, to pretty much keep the wraps on what was going on. That really allowed the virus to spread and take root in Wuhan. And then obviously people, as they began to travel outside that area, infected others. It wasn't until December 31st that they contacted the World Health Organization. So, again, the Chinese Communist Party wants to always exhibit complete control over every situation. And, you know, this was kind of a little bit of a black eye happening, and they initially tried to suppress it. Because it spread so much, it overwhelmed the capacity to handle it with existing medical facilities. So they directly contributed to this problem, and by not being as transparent as I think we in the United States would be, even though they were more transparent now than they were back in SARS days, this is a more virulent, infectious disease, and we can see that. SARS, I think it took about 6-8 months to get up to less than 8,000 cases, and now we're over 40,000.
Talk
so
about the,
their delay really made a big difference.
Yeah, right. It does seem like it certainly made it, or at least allowed it to spread.
Yeah.
So talk about investors here in the with the travel sector. I mean, you have a bunch of people quarantined on a cruise ship outside Tokyo right now. Is it not very good?
No, it is not very good. I mean, the UN put some numbers on this. In 2018, China tourists, there were 168 million of them, so basically half of the U.S. population, traveled around the world, and they spent $275 billion. More than, I think, about two dozen countries now have, you know, basically blocked their borders for anybody coming from China. So, you know, that's a big chunk of money that is going to have an impact globally, and the longer it lasts, and there's going to be some residual. I just think down the road, people will be more concerned and worried about people coming from China until there's really the all clear sign. And that's not going to happen, I think, for weeks and months.
Thanks for all the analysis. Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at Smart Portfolios. You can find him online at macrotides.com.
Up next, Popeye's highly sought chicken sandwich propels a huge jump in sales.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Sales at Popeye's restaurants jumped 42% in the final quarter of last year, and it was mostly due to a certain item people were waiting in line for. Let's talk about the sandwich sensation. RJ Hottaby, consumer equity strategist at Morningstar here in Chicago. RJ, let's talk about that Popeye's chicken sandwich.
Yeah, I mean, it was an impressive, one of the most impressive product launches we've seen in the quick service restaurant space in several decades. As you pointed out, 42% growth from the brand itself. And I think the more important takeaway is that this is going to continue to drive people, new and perhaps lapsed customers to the restaurant, people who haven't been to Popeyes in several years. And I think that's going to lead to outperformance for this brand for at least the next several years.
So it won't just be a fad and people taste it and they say, yeah, that's good. And then it sort of goes back to normal. You think the bump's going to stick around?
Yeah, I think that there will be some, they'll be able to capture a lot of customers from this. And, you know, we do have some new competitors coming through. Obviously, Chick-fil-A has been very aggressive in their promotions, in their marketing to compete with Popeyes. And McDonald's is testing a chicken sandwich as well. But, you know, I think this is a big benefit, a big win for this particular company.
And, RJ, does Popeyes appear to have the supply issue under control now?
They do. I think that right now they are in good shape. No issues on the supply chain front. It's more just kind of managing consumer expectations going forward. But yeah, no real issues. And I think that they are prepared for the overwhelming demand that they've seen on the product.
Where did this chicken craze come from? I mean, was it Chick-fil-A that really started it, or what do you think that's going on here?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is Chick-fil-A, which has become one of the top five players in the quick service restaurant space. I think that's had a lot to do with it. They've done a very good job on a number of fronts, most importantly menu innovation, but also experience. That they continuously or repeatedly hit kind of the top marks in terms of the experience. And I think that brought a lot of people in, and so there's a lot of interest in this category overall. Generally speaking, too, it's perceived as healthier, and that may not always be the reality, but chicken in general, I think, has helped to, as we see more people gravitate towards health and wellness, it's helped on that end, too. But I think the idea of, it's perceived as an authentic product. It's sometimes these chicken sandwiches, are very regional, and Popeyes has done a good job presenting it as kind of made the way it is in the southeast United States. I think they've done a really good job on that front, just kind of presenting the product as authentic, and I think that's really helped to drive the overall craze that we've seen across the industry.
Yeah, just don't look at the calorie count, right, on any of those sandwiches?
Exactly.
Talk about the challenge. Switch for just a moment. You have Burger King now, Impossible Whopper. They got a bump out of it. Now that seems to have gone away.
Yeah, that's the interesting flip side of this equation. So the last couple of quarters, if you look at restaurant brands international overall, we've had good quarters out of Popeyes and Burger King, and Tim Hortons kind of being the laggard. But the Burger King story and the Impossible Whopper obviously being the key driver of those results, it seems like we might have hit that key point or that inflection point for the popularity of plant-based proteins. I don't think it's a fad. I do think it's here to stay. But I think we've reached a point where consumers who are curious and wanted to try and these plant-based products and see if they taste like meat. Most of them have tried it at this point. And, you'll have a group that, wants to continue to incorporate these into their diet. But I think there's just a group that decided it wasn't quite for them. And so I think, what we saw from the third quarter to the fourth quarter is a big drop-off in comps. And the company attributed it to some promotions they ran last year that were successful, as well as the price point on the Impossible Whopper, which they're incorporating in their 2-for-$6 meal. But at the same time, too, from what we've seen from other restaurant operators, I think there is a waning in interest in the plant-based proteins. And I don't think it's going away, but I think that the level of purchasing that we saw last year is unlikely to sustain itself.
Thanks so much, RJ Hottovy, consumer equity strategist at Morningstar. Still ahead, the owner of Woodfield, Gurney Mills, and other malls makes a huge acquisition.
Now with business, here is Joan Doniger at Bloomberg.
Jennifer, Wall Street holding on to its optimism even with the coronavirus. The Dow up 60, the Nasdaq 62, the S&P 10, the Wintrust. WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is down 0.1%. Acorn Shares leading losses there. Now let's check in with Nick Operell at Bates Commodities and Normal. Nick?
Well, good afternoon. Grain prices have been mostly mixed here through the morning. On beans have been a little bit stronger on news of some rumored purchases from China. The grains continue to drift lower on lack of new fundamental buying. March corn down 4 cents a bushel, 379.5. May corn down 4.5 cents, 384. March soybeans up 2 cents a bushel, 884. May beans up 1.5 cents, 896.5. March Chicago wheat down 5.5 cents a bushel, 553.25. May wheat off 4.25, 552.5. Livestock market mostly softer as well this morning. Live cattle down almost a dollar. April hogs down 70 cents right now. Outside markets mostly firmer. April gold up $6 an ounce. March silver up 10 cents. The dollar index for March up 15 points. And the 30-year bonds for March up 18/32. And this is Nick Opperle at Bates Commodities in Normal.
With business now at 23 and 53, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Joan Doniger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. It's great to have you with us. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Jennifer Kuiper. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
The company behind Gurney Mills, Chicago Premium Outlets, and other area shopping malls is acquiring a huge competitor.
It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get a pair of suggestions from a money pro.
Owners of strip clubs and late-night bars in Harvey say they'll go to court to fight a new ordinance restricting their hours of operation.
Amazon wants to depose President Trump over the tech company's losing bid for a $10 billion military contract.
Wall Street, the Dow up 56, NASDAQ up 61, and the S&P up 9 points. Oil today is down 1.5%.
AccuWeather says we'll see times of clouds and sun today, a high 36. It's 31 at O'Hare and the lakefront 32 at Midway.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago.
Markets are higher today. We're joined by Jeff Kilberg, CEO, KKM Financial, and here in Chicago. And Jeff, what is affecting the markets today?
Well, I think it's a continued situation of diminished expectations of the coronavirus, Jennifer, and you're seeing the market move towards all-time highs once again in the S&P 500. It's been a really interesting year. January ended up a little muted, a little flat for the whole return, but here we are in February with optimism again. We're focused back on earnings. We've seen about 350 of the S&P 500 companies actually report to a positive manner.
Is there anything driving it in particular besides coronavirus? Is there something that investors are particularly happy about seeing, especially now that we have seen some earnings reports in the past weeks?
Well, there's something to be happy about. There's always something to be sad about. So I want to give both sides of the fence here, Jennifer. And we're seeing technology as well as utilities. Those are the two sectors that are continue to deliver to investors. Those were the two sectors. Oddly, in the year of 2019, you didn't know utilities could perform the way they did. But this is this search for yield, this global search for yield. Investors have been robbed of their savings with the 10-year note, the Federal Reserve pushing those interest rates below 2%. The 10-year is actually at 155 right now. So this move into utilities. You can get into utilities with XLU. That's ETF that offers a broad swath to a variety of utility companies. But we're also seeing energy continue to deliver earnings. And that's been really fun to watch in 2018. It's a carried over theme into 2020. But where it gets disappointing is energy. Sweet Jesus, we have seen energy, specifically crude oil, just get cream crackered. 2019 was a disastrous year, and this year it's the worst sector again, down about 10% on the year, and that's expressed in XLE. That's the broad swath energy ETF.
And right now we're looking at oil down just about 1.5%.
It is, and I think that's a recurring theme. And it goes back to the coronavirus that we talked about earlier, that we see the biggest consumer of crude oil. And who is that? That's China. Well, if we see expectations of demand for crude oil out of China diminish, you're going to see the price of crude oil go lower. And that's due to the fact that we are producing more oil than ever. We're producing 13 million barrels a day, Jennifer, and that's a record here in the United States. So the demand is not really substantiated overseas. So that is going to see a big test of $50. However, I'm confident that crude oil stays elevated above $50.
So does that end up then presenting some buying opportunities in energy?
I think it does, but not yet. We utilize a lot of relative strength in our ETF model portfolio, Cisco. And I think the fact that we haven't seen the bottom in, believe it or not, after energy is down another 10%, I think we have to get some stabilization. And that stabilization will come out of the demand out of China, but also the commitment, that production curb out of OPEC and non-OPEC members. We have to see them really commit to that. And I think that could stabilize and bring it back. But right now, I think it's a little too early to be taking a dive into XLE.
Talk about tech. You touched on this earlier, but talk about some of those tech stocks, especially you have some of these big names. And I remember when some people were a little skittish about Amazon when it was $400 a share. Now it's $2,100 a share. It's just a challenge because some of these companies are really solid, but you wonder how high can they go?
Well, the big are getting bigger, Cisco. I think specifically in tech, we talk a lot on CNBC about the FANG stocks, but it's interesting to see the big are getting bigger. Last year, just alone, two tech names. Look at Microsoft. Look at Microsoft and Apple. They had spectacular years. So the S&P 500 was up over 30% in the year of 2019. Microsoft and Apple, they contributed half of that. They contributed 15%. The other 488 stocks took care of the rest, but it's remarkable to see assets continue to be attracting technology, and I think this is the real reason that this global attraction to these tech names, and they continue to deliver, and they continue to refine. A lot of people were kind of pushing away on Apple, saying that they weren't able to deliver, but yes, once again, they do, and once you get in that ecosystem of Apple, you continue to have to buy additional products. So I think the tech get bigger, but look at a name like NVIDIA. NVIDIA got an upgrade today. These are all tech names. I think when you talk about tech, where do you want to be exposed, Cisco? I think it's the cloud. That is how Microsoft got turned around after being stagnant for decades.
Jeff, on the Tesla roller coaster, it's climbing again. Why? And then also Xerox has sweetened its bid for HP. Can you talk about those two?
Buckle that seatbelt. Wow, Tesla has really been on the move, up 80% year to date. I'm a big believer in Tesla, but I just don't know if the valuation is going to be able to sustain itself up here. When you see a name trading like this, the volatility, it's just remarkable. So Tesla, I think if you were in on it, God bless, and I think it's wonderful that you've been able to participate, but I don't think you can buy Tesla up here, up 80% year to date. And we talk about energy, Duke Energy is a name that's going to be out later this week in earnings. And I think energy, by and large, of course, has been a laggard, but I think a name like Duke Energy, D-U-K, I think it's due to have a little bit of a pop here because it is essentially a utility. And I think owning utilities, again, are going to attract assets in 2020. So there's a couple names for you, Jennifer.
Thanks so much. Always good insight. Thank you, Jeff Kilberg. Here's a couple of quotes on some of these stocks. You have Xerox today up right about 1.25%, $37.64. HP is up 1% at $21.95. And Tesla, it does continue to rise. As Jeff mentioned, the stock $764 a share. It is up 2.25% today. Jeff Kilberg, CEO of KKM Financial here in Chicago.
And up next, a mega deal involving the company that owns Woodfield, Orland Square, and other Chicago area malls.
Money Talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Mall owner Simon Property Group is set to buy rival Taubman Centers in a $3.5 billion deal. Let's talk about the huge acquisition. Jan Rogers Niffen, CEO of J. Rogers Niffen Worldwide, based in New York. Jan, I guess for starters, is this a good deal?
Well, that's the real question. Is it a good deal? Is it a good idea? Yes. They paid a lot for this. You know, it was quite a premium to the trading price, but the stock market thinks it's a good deal. And I think that it's what you have to do. I mean, Brookfield, who bought GGP, is, you know, the biggest player in the States now with enclosed malls. Simon would be second, and this would give Simon 26, 27 very high-end AA+, because that's all Taubman's got, malls. I don't see that they almost had to do this. If they didn't do this, Brookfield would have, and they're the two biggest players, and they needed these properties. And my guess is the price was pretty good because there was at least one other person that might have been interested.
Yeah, talk about just that sort of pressure that in an age when malls in general are struggling, some are doing well, but a lot of them are struggling, you need this sort of consolidation.
I think the answer is most are struggling and some are doing well, just like you said. Fortunately for Brookfield and Simon, they've got the ones that are doing well, and now Simon will have, you know, 25, 26 more that are doing well because they're some of the best malls in the country, like Short Hills Mall near New York City in New Jersey. So, yes, there's 1,100 malls in the country, and there's 250, 350 good ones, and these guys have them, and they're acquiring more of them, and they're going to own that space, and they will be the malls that survive and grow and have the best stores and have higher rents and have more traffic. The rest of the malls are the ones that are going to struggle, lose 6 or 7% of their foot traffic every year, and see lots and lots of people close stores in those malls. So it's a tale of two cities, unfortunately. But fortunately for Simon, they're in one of the good cities as opposed to one of the bad cities.
So what is it that's working for Simon at this point, especially with what we've been talking about, the struggling model these days?
It's just the quality of the properties. If you look at the very best malls that are the biggest with the strongest anchors, with the best stores in them, with the most restaurants, that have had the most money reinvested in them, that make the malls better and better, you see that those are the ones that are winning, and the ones nearby are getting eaten alive by the internet. So it's just survival of the fittest and strongest, and Simon and Brookfield own those fittest and strongest malls in general, and now they really do, because Taubman will be part of Simon.
Who really benefits under this deal, Simon or Taubman or both?
Both, because the price for the shareholders of Taubman went up by something like 50% today, and at least off of the pre-acquisition price. And the market has looked at it and said, and despite the fact they're paying a lot for it, it's going to be accretive to Simon's earnings. So I think, yes, this is a win-win for everybody except the malls that are going to get pushed around by these big, strong malls. It's not a win-win if you happen to be a weak mall. It's clearly a win-win if you're one of the strong, if you're one of the two strong players here.
Always good analysis. Thank you, Jan Rogers-Niffen, CEO of J. Rogers-Niffen Worldwide.
Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday and still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday. Sharing his expertise this afternoon is John Beaver, president of Phase 3 Advisory Services and registered principal with Royal Alliance Associates in Buffalo Grove. John, what's your first pick?
Well, Jennifer, we got two breakout stories today. The first one is Amazon. No surprise there. January 30th, they had blowout earnings reported at $6.47 a share versus $4.05 expected. The cloud business grew 34%. But what I like, the stock broke out of an 18-month consolidation. It had gotten ahead of itself. That breakout level, just over 2050. The stock is right now trading just a little over 2100. So this is a low-risk entry at this point.
Who's the closest competitor with the cloud service that Amazon has?
Well, I tell you, it's more than just cloud. There are plenty. But think about this. Amazon is involved more than online sales. Cloud, streaming content, delivery, electric trucks, autonomous vehicles, pharmacy, and now they've added in a satellite mesh network. So I don't even think the cloud is going to be the dominant factor for them going forward 10 years from now, but it is interesting at this point in time. They are so large, they're in the top three global companies for revenue, number one being Walmart.
And just amazing that I remember, in fact, we touched on this earlier in the show. I remember when Amazon was about $400 a share, and some people were saying, oh, it's expensive, it's risky, and now here it is above $2,100.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, they kind of control what they report on profits because they are choosing to reinvest so much money into growth and into moving into additional areas. They could always hold back on that and show more earnings. So they really are in the catbird seat at this point in time.
All right, Amazon is your first pick. What's your second pick?
Second one is a potential breakout, Vernetix. This is a real David and Goliath story. So the company is waiting for a Supreme Court decision on a patent infringement by Apple. This case goes back 10 years to the iPhone 3. The founders of the company developed the technology, so this is not a patent troll company. So in 2012, a Texas court awarded $368 million to Vernetix. Federal court ordered a new trial on damages, and after a second trial in 2016, Vernetix was awarded even more, $439 million. Apple has continued to appeal and use legal maneuvers to delay the payment, taking the case all the way to the Supreme Court.
So is this one of those high-risk, potentially high-reward picks?
Yes, it is. This one would be speculative as opposed to Amazon. So Vernetix has a market cap of just under $300 million. And you're looking at a net award worth probably at least $300 million just for the iPhone 3. So this is interesting. The court case is going to be announced on February 24th. The Supreme Court is going to announce whether they're going to actually take the case or not. There could very easily be a short squeeze. The float on this right now in terms of the short shares to the float shares, so that's 9 million short versus 62 million altogether. That percent is 14%. Think about this. Tesla, one of the most shorted stocks, is at 18%. So a short squeeze could be very interesting on this stock in a couple weeks.
Thanks so much, John Beaver. Always appreciate you being on the show. John Beaver, president of Phase 3 Advisory Services, also a registered principal with Royal Alliance Associates. Here again is his two picks, Amazon, ticker symbol AMZN, and Vernetix, ticker symbol VHC.
You'll find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and theradio.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.